the Rebel Room, 2 weeks in a row. Believe it. I'm Case Kiefer, joined by Ray Brewer and Mike Grimala. Unfortunately, not a very cheery tone on today's Rebel Room, despite Mike's Patriots winning the sixth Super Bowl of this tenure. Good for him, but not so good for the Rebels. Three straight losses by 17 points, two losses last week since Mike and Ray came to you. And there's just not a lot looking up with these, not a lot the Rebels did well. What can you guys say with where UNLV's at right now?
Well, the 5-1 start is gone. Like, that's over. I think most fans were savvy enough to understand that they really played the bottom of the conference for those six games, and the schedule was going to get tougher and more difficult. And this was the real test of if there was any improvement in the team this season. And so far, they failed the test. There's no other way to put it. You can't really put a positive spin on it. They've lost three games. They haven't been close in any of them. They weren't competitive. They played 120 straight minutes of non-competitive basketball where they just have not looked like they had a chance to win or keep the game close. So any sort of goodwill or hope that they sort of built up with that 5-1 start in conference, I think they've pretty much given it all back at this point.
Yeah, the one stat for me that stood out, Mike and Case, was in the last three games, they've only had the lead for about a minute. And, you know, defensively, I think there's one thing when we look at the box score and we see how many points were scored or how many turnovers or assists, good or bad either way, but a box score doesn't measure defense. And you go to that San Diego State game that we talked about last week, Mike, and like San Diego State made X percent of their shots, and they missed 24, and UNLV gave up 15 offensive rebounds or whatever. And then you looked at just, you know, Reno, which top five team in the nation, and they're great, but, you know, they had no chance. UNLV is topping Reno. And then Utah State, they really had no chance of topping them as well. And the defense is like, wow, how did it get so bad, or was it always that bad and we just didn't see it?
Well, the first thing you look at is they went with Nick Blair at center to start the Utah State game, which is something they've been trying out recently due to injuries and some, you know, the stuff that Nick Blair brings to the table. And he's 6'5". He's barely a power forward. He's more of a small forward type. But they played him at center, and Utah State has a real center, Nemias Kata, and that was just a physical mismatch in the early going. UNLV, if Mbaké Jiang is not in the game, they have no rim protection, and even Jiang is just working his way back from injury, so he's not out there full-time, and the rest of the guys just struggle to contain dribble penetration. I mean, Noah Robotham does a good job, I think, most of the time, sort of not getting blown by and doing a good job of containing, but the rest of the team, they struggle to defend off the dribble, they struggle to stay connected to their man when people are in motion. And Utah State was really well coached offensively. You just watch the way they run their offense. The people are moving. They catch the ball, and they're decisive. As soon as they catch the ball, no matter who it is, they're either right on the catch, they're dribbling it, they're passing it, or they're shooting it. And then you see UNLV at the other end, to compare and contrast. UNLV, whoever catches the ball, they catch it, they come to a stop, they look around, and then they decide what to do. Utah State is just, they were a step ahead, and UNLV could not keep up defensively. That's three games in a row now. They really have not been able to get a stop.
Yeah, so UNLV stands at 11-10 overall now. Still 5-4 in the conference, as we mentioned, at 5-1 start. I'm just wanting to get your take from you guys. What should the expectations be going forward now? I mean, Mike said the 5-1 start, all the goodwill is pretty much extinguished. It wasn't like they were blowing out every team, every game in that stretch, but you know they had some nice wins. If you're looking forward, do you think are they somewhere in between the stretch we've seen in these last three games and the 5-1 start, or is this more what to expect? How much they've struggled lately? Just where does the ball kind of land in that regard?
I don't think they can be in between because I don't think there are any Mountain West teams that are in between. Like the teams in the Mountain West are either better than UNLV, like Utah State, UNR and San Diego State, or the teams that are worse than UNLV are way worse. They're at the bottom. You're talking about the Wyomings, Colorado States, San Jose States. There's really no middle tier. I think UNLV, maybe New Mexico, is, you know, make up the entire middle tier. We haven't seen Boise State yet. We haven't seen Fresno State yet. We haven't seen UNLV against those teams, I mean. But I think most people would rank them above UNLV. So maybe they are sort of on the same level, but I'm not sure if there is an in-between for UNLV. It's, so far, they've beat the teams they should beat, and they've lost to the teams that they have not been able to stack up against talent-wise.
Boise State and Fresno State, both the next two up on the schedule, going to Boise State on Wednesday. Home for Fresno State Saturday. You got to think they're going to be an underdog in both of those games. Get your take, Brewer, what the expectation should be, where you kind of see this week falling. Do you think the Rebels kind of right the ship and are competitive in these games, win one of them? What do you think?
Well, let me ask you this. At what stage of this UNLV basketball season, we're 21 games in now, do we start saying, okay, let's start turning the page and seeing what we could do for next year? Because Bryce Hamilton's a four-star kid. He played 10 minutes at Utah State.
Yeah, he's in the doghouse. He doesn't play. He like 10 minutes is the norm for him now.
Yeah, and it's just like between he and Woodbury, you got your young nucleus. You've brought him in. Why not let him play? Because what to me looks like a bigger problem is that Menzies wants to play juniors and seniors, and that's not going to get you far in recruiting when every big recruit you bring in can't even get on the court, arguably. I mean, Hardy, of course, has played. You know, Natombe, however you say his last name, is great. But, you know, I just don't know. Are you going to try to make a run in the Mountain West tournament with Clyborne and Robotham and Nick Blair at center, or are you going to try to develop Hamilton and Woodbury? That, to me, is who cares what happens against Boise. Is Hamilton going to not shoot the ball? Well, he didn't shoot the ball against Utah State.
That's you're seeing a lot of the fans.
Shot the ball four times, my bad.
A lot of fans, you know, that, according to, you know, social media and the comment section on our stories and stuff like that, are definitely taking that same stance now. Like, they want to see the young guys. Like I said, at this day and age, fans are savvy enough. They know that, like I said, they're savvy enough to know that UNLV didn't play great teams early in the year. They're savvy enough to understand what rebuilding is all about. If Marvin Menzies wanted to sell it to them that way, if Menzies wanted to say, we're going to play young guys and we may lose some games, but we're building for the future, I think fans would be okay with that. I think fans are frustrated when Bryce Hamilton, he was a top 50 recruit. He's a four-star guy. Cornerstone, or he should be a cornerstone of the program. And he's playing 10 minutes a game while Marvin Coleman, who is a walk-on freshman, played, I think he played 11 minutes at Utah State. So Marvin Coleman is getting more minutes than Bryce Hamilton at this point. Marvin Coleman's getting more minutes than Trey Woodbury. Nick Blair is getting more minutes than both of them combined, and he's another walk-on. So it would be easy for Menzies at some point to say, hey, we're going to turn this over to the young guys. I think one of the issues is Noah Robotham and Chris Clyburn, who are, you know, manning two of those three guard positions, have not played poorly. Like, they haven't played bad enough to lose their jobs. Robotham struggled early in the season. The first handful of games, he couldn't make a shot. But since then, he's been good. Chris Clyburn is playing the best ball of his career. You know, he's solid 12, 13 points a game. He's making three-pointers. Robotham and Clyburn are your minutes leaders at this point in the year. So it's not like they've played badly enough to lose their jobs to freshmen who are trying to learn on the job. We still might see it at some point. It's just I don't see Menzies doing it now or, you know, anytime in the near future turning it over to the young
guys. I mean, if I'm Bryce Hamilton, my bags are already packed.
And that's one of the risks you run. We saw that with Troy Baxter, who Marvin Menzies, part of his first recruiting class when he came here and he had like a month to put together a team. He somehow snagged Troy Baxter, who was like a top 100 recruit, another like four-star guy, 6'8", super athletic forward. And everyone was excited, like, wow, we didn't expect to get any good players, and we somehow landed this guy. And then he didn't play as a freshman, and then he transferred. And, I mean, he hasn't amounted to, like, a ton. He hasn't made, you know, Menzies regret it, I don't think. But we've already seen that play out once at UNLV is what I'm saying. And if I don't know anything about Bryce Hamilton or his camp or anything like that, but you just look at the minutes and the pedigree, there's a lot of schools where he could be playing a lot more.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing, because now you're in a vicious cycle where you're kind of chasing your tail, right? They're already, you know, short on scholarships with 13. Slovakian doesn't even show up at the home games. You know, the guy taking one of your scholarships. You don't have anything that you could bring in to upgrade anymore. And the one guy that you do have that has a lot of talent isn't getting on the floor. And, you know, now you've lost three in a row. You've only led for 82 seconds or whatever it is.
Exactly. When you start 5-1 in conference and your freshmen aren't playing that much, fans are, okay, well, we're winning. When you lose three in a row and you get blown out in all of them, then the fans say, well, we're bad. Why not be bad with and develop at the same time and develop some of these young players going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's an argument that makes a lot of sense to me. I can also see why it's such a delicate balance and tough, though. I think maybe the answer is, I mean, there's just got to be a little bit better balance. You mentioned Robotham and Clyburn leading the team in minutes. Maybe, I mean, you just cut into them a little bit to at least get, you know, somewhat of a look at Trey Woodbury and Bryce Hamilton. The Bryce Hamilton thing is really baffling. I mean, there's got to be, in all these situations, but especially his, I think there's got to be something under the surface or something that we don't know a ton about.
Well, his the advanced statistics, like the metrics, he grades out as the worst defensive player on the team. But he's a freshman, you know? Do you want him to play and like play through those mistakes and learn from them, or do you want him to make those mistakes on the practice court and fix it there? I think that's what Menzies always says. Like, he evaluates you in practice. He wants you to practice like you're playing in a game. So the defense has not been good. But plus minus, Bryce Hamilton is the best on the team. He's got the best plus minus numbers. They outscore the opponents when he's on the floor. You can clearly see he's the most talented offensive player. Just the dribble moves, the footwork, the ability to score, you know, three-point range, mid-range, get to the rim. He can do stuff that no one else on the team can do. But the minutes are just so limited. So if they keep losing, maybe Menzies shifts that. And if things keep going badly, if they lose the next two and all of a sudden they're under 500, then maybe you give the freshmen a little more run and see what they can do. But yeah, that's an issue they're going to have to deal with at some point this season.
Right. I mean, I've heard this a lot, and a lot of times, you know, I was looking into, I know Brewer was getting a lot of grief for some of his Reno comments, so I waded into the comments treacherously last week, and this was one criticism that actually did make a little bit of sense to me, is that the young guys should be getting more play, and, you know, if they lose two more games this week, especially if they're lopsided to Boise State and Fresno State, it's hard for me to believe that kind of is Menzies totally impervious to hearing any of this. I mean, at some point, I think maybe they do extend in that direction. Not that you would know way better than me, but at some point, doesn't it have to reach in that direction?
Well, Menzies, he's not completely opposed to playing freshmen. Like, it's not like that's one of his hard rules. He started Brandon McCoy from day one and played him a ton and ran the entire offense through him. Joel Tomboy has started from day one, and he was an unranked recruit, and he's started, and he's, you know, your number one option or your 1A. So he'll play freshmen. He elevated Chamwa Chachwa to the lineup, you know, mostly due to injuries, but he'll play freshmen. It's something specifically with Bryce Hamilton and Trey Woodbury that I guess he doesn't like what he's seeing from them in practice or on the court on game days, and that's what's holding them back for more minutes, I guess. That's the only explanation, because he is willing to play freshmen if he thinks they can help him win.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I've always been a supporter of Marvin, as you guys know, and our listeners know. I always said that year one was a wash because he got screwed, even though he knew what he was stepping into. And next year for me is the year, right? It's like, hey, this team's got to be improved. They got to be at the top of the league. They got to be threatening to get in the tournament. And then I look at the team that's going to be there next year, and I'm like, well, I kind of know how they're going to be. And I look at the schedule, and I'm like, oh, I kind of know how that's going to be.
Well,
disagree. It's fine.
No. I know the core of the team is coming back and intact, and we know who most of the major players are going to be next year. We can plot out most of the rotation right now if we wanted to. But what we don't know is what it's going to look like when Bryce Hamilton is playing 34 minutes a game. Like, are we going to see that this year? I think that's what we're talking about. Like, we have not seen that yet. Bryce Hamilton, if everything goes according to plan, he's supposed to be your best player next year, your number one scorer, like the guy you build your offense around. He's going to play, you know, starters minutes. We haven't seen that this year. We haven't seen him play half of that. So what is the team going to look like when he's out there a lot of the time? Like him and Hamilton and Joel Tomboy, those look like your two best players next year, along with Justin. But Hamilton and Tomboy, are we going to get to see them play together for 20 minutes a game at some point during this season? We haven't seen it yet. So that's, I think, what the fans are sort of clamoring for. And if you want to speak for the fans, if this team, you know, they've lost the last three games all by 17 points, strangely enough. If they play Hamilton for 30 minutes at Boise State and they lose by 25, are you okay with that?
I mean, they wouldn't be, but I think probably they probably should be based on the demands I've seen.
At least there'd be some tangible proof that they have a direction. Right now, it's just like, okay, maybe going 5-1 to open league play was the worst thing that could happen, because then all of a sudden maybe Marvin was like, hey, we're in first place. Let me see what I could do with Noah and Chris. And then Juicebox is done. And then now you got to spread it out. Now you're hitting some shots. So, okay, let's keep rolling. And now all of a sudden the wheels have fallen off. You know, the law of averages have factored in. And you're back to what we thought they'd be, fighting to be a 500 team. And you got to ask yourself, you know, we've got 10 games left, give or take. Why not get Bryce Hamilton and Hardy on the floor at the same time and see what happens? You know?
Yeah, it's tough. I think I lean towards, I mean, the patience and you guys being right. But I just totally, you know, a lot of times we'll sit here and say the fans are overreacting and, you know, need to calm down. But I think maybe this goes towards Grimala's point of them being savvy. But I also just really see from their vantage point, it has got to be so frustrating. How at some point it can't be next year. It seems like we've been saying next year, every single year with not just UNLV basketball. It seems like we do the same thing with football. And I can't even imagine like being a fan in that perspective. I'm just thinking back to the end of last year when they got blown out in the Mountain West tournament to Reno. I was covering the game and hadn't been around for a while. And I talked to, I think, both of you. And Brewer, you agreed with me that the column should be the stakes are really raised for next year now that this year ended up so disappointing. Now we're in next year. They're fighting to be 500. It just, if I'm a fan, I'm banging my head against the wall by keep saying, oh, well, next year's the year. We're going to have to see what happens. What happens if next year they're a little bit better? And then we're going to sit here at the same time and say, well, next year they're going to have to be really good and make the tournament. At some point,
I don't disagree with you, but, you know, if I think Menzies next year, he's got to make the tournament, just like Tony's got to win a bowl or go to a bowl.
I agree.
I mean, I think it's pretty cut and dry. Like Marvin, this is your fourth year. You've got your guys. Everybody on the roster is yours. Develop them. You know, you got a full off season. See what you could do.
I agree. Like that'll be his fourth year, his third, you know, real season. I kind of throw out that first year, but just because of the recruiting situation, but year three at a place like UNLV, you kind of have to make the tournament, or else how much progress are you really showing? And you know what? How much progress can you really sell to the fan base if you have been here for that long without really making the tournament in this league? Also,
yeah, the league sucks, and UNLV can't. I mean, is losing by 17 points to everybody? I mean, you shouldn't be losing to San Diego State and Utah State by 17 points. You're UNLV.
It's definitely a talent thing. You can see those teams are much more talented than UNLV when they stack up. And I'm not saying this to be insulting or callous towards Nick Blair or Marvin Coleman, you know, the walk-ons. It's not a put-down of any kind. But if next year, if Marvin Menzies is in his third year and he has not recruited players better than Nick Blair and Marvin Coleman to play those minutes, then at that point it's on Menzies, and he has to be held accountable for that, right? Like if you've got 3 years and you can't recruit someone better than Nick Blair, like that's totally on Marvin, and that cannot be blamed on anyone else. And that would be really hard for him to explain away.
Yeah, I totally agree. So many, a lot of I keep just seeing the parallels to football in conversations we have, because I think the last couple of years we've talked about how they had no depth and they had such bad injuries. At some point when you've been there long enough, you have to recruit to be able to get through these things that you know are going to happen. So I'm fine with you guys. I will lean. Next year is the year. They got to make the tournament. But if we're sitting here in early, 2020, and someone mentions that, well, next year's the year, they're going to have to do good, I'm going to go absolutely ballistic. It's going to be the loudest I've ever gotten on this podcast. No more next year. This is a moratorium on next year starting now.
I don't disagree. I mean,
agreed. I'll sign that oath right now.
Grimala hasn't been to a tournament game in how many years? I mean,
Anthony Bennett was the last one.
Yeah, that feels a long time ago.
Yeah, like his career, his entire pro career came and went, and UNLV still hasn't been back to the tournament.
A number one overall pick. Pretty crazy. All right. Well, seems like we're winding down here. Any parting thoughts? We didn't really talk much about these two games. I know we kind of explained why, but any thoughts on them or anything else that we didn't touch today on the Rebel Room?
I'm good. I spoke my piece.
It would help alleviate a lot of the pressure if UNLV could win one of these next two games, Fresno State or Boise State.
Agreed. And they look on paper, like I said, they'll be an underdog, but it doesn't seem like games they should lose by 17 points again. They should have an opportunity to steal one of these at the end, you would think. So there you have it, the Rebel Room. We'll be back hopefully next week, hopefully consistently now throughout the end of the season. For Ray and Mike, I'm Case. Thanks for listening.